I may have to come to your house just so I can pet him.
Feel free.
I
I don't know if
just
he'll
need
let you,
to.
but feel free to try.
Oh. Oh, Auntie Blair's gonna get in there. We're petting.
I feel like Cougar and Puma be like, "Hey, how you been?" Lynx is gonna be like, "Who are you?"
Who is this crazy woman?
is the lady that's in the screen. How did you get here?
How'd you get here? He's such a baby. Oh, I love him so much.
You loved him, ain't even met him. I
I would
love.
die for that cat, and I've never laid a hand on him.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Blair.
And I'm Kirsten, and we are
Mediocre
Content. And yes,
honestly, it's been so long. I'm like shocked we know how to do that still.
We did. I mean, we were here like what, maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago now.
Yes.
And unfortunately, in the calamity of trying to unpack, things went a little more crazy than I think we anticipated,
Yeah.
but that's okay.
Moving is hard, okay?
Moving is hard. No. Moving isn't hard. Packing and unpacking is hard.
There you go. That's it.
That's
what I'm
the
trying to say. Yeah.
I may or may not have just gotten the last of our paper boxes unpacked.
Very
Yes.
nice.
Thank you.
I think
Thank you.
we have unpacked every box. Maybe there's one in the garage, but like for the most part, we've unpacked every box, which is a huge milestone.
It is.
And I feel like these past couple of days, we've been here like a month and a half ish and like on the island.
Yeah.
And this past couple of days, I think is the first time I've really felt like, okay, my brain has
Yes.
adjusted. This is home now.
Yes.
We can fully settle in and relax and just be at home.
Yeah. No, I
So.
would agree. The icing on the cake is for us today. We had the lovely cleaning group that came. And for
Yes.
some reason, when the house is so fresh and clean, like it just makes it feel
Yes.
like even better. Like you worked and worked and worked, and now someone came and like washed all the yuck away. And you're like,
Yes.
thank you so much. And for those of you who are like, ew, you don't just clean your own house. I've never had this much house and I enjoy having a free weekend. So if I can afford it, I feel like it's worth it.
Yeah.
And it's
No,
only
she's
once a
right.
month. So it's
Yeah.
not like it's crazy.
Yeah. Honestly, if you can afford it, getting your house cleaned, there's nothing like it.
Oh, it
There's
smells so
nothing like it.
nice.
It's so wonderful.
Yeah.
And like, I just feel so much better afterwards. I've only
Yeah.
ever had my house cleaned once.
Worth
And that
it.
was when we lived in our old house. But like, I'd do it again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and also on another aside, we have another hurricane on the way. I didn't tell you guys the last time because we weren't on air last week, but we had Hurricane Helene, and luckily we did not get a lot of damage personally, but a lot of our surrounding areas obviously did, and we're still going through that. And then we have Hurricane Milton on the way, but I think we're going to just get outskirts on that one too. More worried about Tampa and Orlando area. That's going to be
Definitely.
really
I know
heavy
that
spot.
they put Walt Disney World on like a state of emergency or whatever.
It's
So,
literally going to pass right over them.
yeah.
And it's already Hurricane 4. Like, Milton, calm down. Like, who are
Yeah,
you trying to impress?
so first I was gonna say that like Milton is a very weak name for a hurricane.
He said, watch
Like
this.
no offense to any Miltons out there, but like bro. But all the but like that's not a challenge. Like I'm not
No.
trying to make you like don't just be what you are. Like,
Sure.
you know, we want you to
Yeah.
be a weak ass hurricane.
Please be a weak Oh my gosh. No, I agree. Helene sounded very like punchy. And then at the end, I think she did kind of crest into that like
Yeah.
category three era. And I just feel
Yeah.
like that makes sense for her. But a
Yeah.
Milton? I
Yeah.
don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Our thoughts go out to everyone who's been affected.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've both, Kirsten's currently on the East Coast. I lived most of my life on the East Coast. And, you know, we know how it is. We hope everybody's doing okay. Like, you know, check on your neighbors, check on your pets, you know, the whole thing.
Indeed. Be safe.
Donate if you can, you know.
Yes, we've done a lot of that.
Call your elected representatives and let them know that you're upset that your house has been swept away.
I remember, was it here? I think it was here where there was like that viral video going around of the church that was just in the ocean recently.
Oh, no. Oh my God.
But it wasn't due to a hurricane, I don't think. I forget what happened, but it really was. I think it was in like maybe St. Augustine or something. Maybe I'm thinking of that wrong, but there was like a literal church just like floating down the beach.
Mm-hmm. That I believe it. I believe it. Mm-hmm. I saw several videos of like on the Outer Banks in North Carolina. There's when they first started developing that area, there were houses that were developed way too close to the ocean.
Obviously.
And like with rising sea levels / hurricanes, they have been slowly being washed away. And so you every now and then you'll see a video of like a house being just like taken out by the ocean.
Yeah.
Everybody, and it's like vacant, like people know not to live there, so it's fine. Sure. But people just like video and like watch the house just swept away by the ocean. They're like, here goes another one.
It's just like, I wanted ocean front, not ocean in. Right. Like, that sucks.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Oh well. With all that to say, we're moving forward, and hopefully we'll be a little more consistent now that we're established. Hopefully things have been good with everybody else.
Yes.
And this is all just to say, welcome back, hopefully officially.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, hopefully. We're getting it together. We promise. We also, we're kind of behind on our programming. Like we did such a, I will say, like, pat us on the back for a second. We did such a great job of like organizing all of our podcasts for like September, October, November, December to like finish out the year and like get you guys through. We're behind. So
we
might be doing October episodes in November, and that's just how it's going to be. And we're not sorry, because I feel like from now until December, all holiday content is acceptable.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if we're doing a spooky episode on Thanksgiving, like,
you're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah. Because I had all the cryptid episodes planned.
Right.
Yeah.
You had all of these lovely things. I was going to talk about some things that I forget, but I will remind you.
I think it was like the ghost hunting or something.
Yeah. It was ghost hunting. And there was a couple other like fall topics I wanted to talk about. And
yeah. So they're still coming is the,
yes.
Yeah. But, Merry Christmas. It's Nessie.
Right. Right.
It's the vibe.
Moral of the story is it might be Halloween from now until December, and that's fine.
Who doesn't love spook December?
Spooksember. Yeah. I'm also very excited for Halloween, by the way. I feel like because this is a moving year for us, like I haven't fully embraced the Halloween spirit as early as I would have liked to. And so we were walking around the neighborhood and everyone's like got their Halloween stuff ready to go.
So fun.
There's two houses that have collabed and they have like a massive amount of like statues and like skeletons and like lights and like, you know, pumpkin arches. They have the whole, like, they went to Home Depot for the past like 5 years and like got all the things and like set it up in both of their yards. And Chris and I are looking at this like they have to have a specific storage unit for all their Halloween stuff.
Have to.
And lo and behold, there's like a moving truck or like a U-Haul like right next, like parked in their driveway. And I'm like, I bet that they
have
a special Halloween decoration thing. Like, they had so much stuff. Like, so much.
Let me tell you, there's one thing you won't be finding me doing, and that is putting any Halloween animatronic nothing in my house at any point in time. Even if I had a basement, that's the worst part. I ain't walking down and seeing it staring at me.
You're right.
Every time I go in the basement.
No, you're right.
It would have to be in storage as well.
Yeah. Especially those big, like, Halloween skeletons.
Yes.
Those things are, first of all, they're so cool, and I aspire to own one.
But 12 feet.
12 feet tall. They do have a smaller one this year where it looks like the skeleton's like coming out of the ground, which is very cool. And I've seen a lot of cool applications of that. Yes, still very big. Yep.
have to be
like,
in storage.
Where do they put it? And I was like, they either put it in their garage in place of a car.
Fair.
Or they put it in storage.
Yeah. I bet it's storage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ain't gonna find me doing that. Mm-mm.
Crazy.
I have two blow ups, and the only reason we have them is because they're blow ups and they can squish down into a box.
Right. And that's why I think a lot of people have them is because they're so easy to store and they're like effective, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fun.
But very excited for trick or treating this year. I haven't put up a single Halloween decoration, but we're getting there. I'm aspiring to do that this week, but we'll see.
I'm aspiring to get Tyler to do that this week as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We did
put up little like white lights for like all year round on our front and back porch, and they look really cute, and I'm very excited about that.
We have not done that yet. That is one thing we need to do, but we just got the garage fully unpacked.
Yeah.
And that's where they live. So I'm like, well, we'll find them eventually.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we had those ones in my living room too, with like the twinkling lights.
Oh, yeah.
It was very cute.
Very cute. But
now we don't have a couch. So, anyway,
we'll get there. It's fine.
We'll get there.
Everything is fine. Okay. I'm going to disclaim now before we yap anymore. I mean, we owe them like a little bit of extra time because we've been away for so long. I think it's been like 2 months, except for that
one random episode.
Yeah. Sorry, guys. We girl boss too close to the sun. What can I say?
Did.
I was like, we're going to get on it. We're going to do it and it's going to be good. And then we're like, no.
We had the best intentions.
We did. Yeah. We really did. Like, we had the best intentions of pre-recording like a bunch beforehand. And we definitely didn't do that.
That didn't happen either.
We're so good at this. Anyway. All right. So if you forgot, we are not experts on anything ever at any time. If you've come to the podcast for any kind of advice or, you know, any kind of anything, really, we're not the place for that. Mm-hmm. So we are going to try and teach you about things that you may not have known, but just like, you know, fact check us, please comment, tell us we're wrong, and then we'll fix it because we're doing the best we can over here, clearly. Kirsten, tell us some good news, please.
I will say one bit of good news, actually, that's not on here that we teased right before we moved, and that is the only reason that things are going to be screwy up until December is because we do have something new coming. And I say we, but Blair has something new coming. So keep that in mind for January, everyone.
The way I'm so excited for this new like style of podcast that we're going to be putting out. Not all of them. Kirsten's going to stay the same format. I'm going to like mix it up a little for you guys. But I've been like writing down like different thoughts and things that like I want to talk about. And like the list is so long and I'm so excited. Okay.
So that's good news. Number one, stay tuned for January 2025 with some new mediocre content. Besides that, the second piece of good news I have is about cats, which I feel like anything involving cats is good news.
Side note, we should say that our cats did make a transition into the moves very well.
They did.
Everyone survived. Everyone got on the plane, like did the things.
Everyone's
Salem
fine.
Did howl for 3.5 hours, but that is acceptable. Neither here nor there. So everyone's fine. Everyone's adjusting to their new home. We're all good. All right.
Exactly. Go ahead. Well, this cat's name is Taboo, which is adorable, first of all. And I've titled this cat burglars for a very good reason, because Taboo, a 12-year-old black and white resident of West Yorkshire, England, has stolen gloves, socks, underpants, and shoes from multiple properties across the area that he lives. Her owner, who is Sandra Danskin, has now been forced to share regular pictures of the loot on social media so that residents can come and reclaim their stolen items. However, Danskin, who usually is on night shift duty, says that Taboo is rarely caught and has become a master of her criminal trade. Danskin is quoted as saying, whenever I come home from my shift, there are all sorts of things waiting for me, either dragged in through the cat flap or left on the drive. This morning, I had 4 pairs of socks and a pair of underpants. She loves bringing back items of clothing like that. But also, we've had a mop head and kitchen rolls. We even had 6 eggs once, still in their box, but all broken. We think she must have taken them off. I know. We think she must have taken them off someone's doorstep when the milkman dropped them off, end quote.
Wow.
Taboo is going for it.
Oh my God.
Neighbors have joked that they changed the locks of their houses and that Danskin should figure out how to train her little thief to discern worthless goods from high-end goods like Rolexes. Fair.
Literally. Literally.
However, Sandra believes that Taboo steals clothes from people's washing lines, which makes sense, or sneaks into their houses if the door is left open, which also makes sense.
Or windows, too.
Or I'm windows. Yeah. They might have a doggy door, which is also the perfect time for her to come in.
First of all, calling it a cat flap is so good.
It is a cat flap.
Why have we, like, I love that. Anyway.
Cat flap. it's just great. So she's only been caught once so far when a neighbor spotted her trying to take a t-shirt from his clothes dryer in the kitchen. her owner, Danskin, said that if she brings a sock back, she will always go back to get the matching one. In fact, she has a box full of stuff she's brought, and every now and then I go on Facebook to post so that people can claim. So Taboo was originally a house cat and belonged to Sandra's daughter, Gemma. And eventually, Gemma could not bear with the kleptomaniac cat any longer, and so he went to live with Sandra and her 3 other cats. Now the cat burglar loves to let her current owner know when she's pulled off a successful heist by admitting a signature howl, which I'm sure is lovely. So anyway, that is Taboo, and it is adorable.
Imagine being internet famous, but because you have to put people's clothes that your cat dragged in, like,
yeah,
it brings a whole new meaning to the phrase, look what the cat dragged in.
It's very true. It's very true. You're like, Barbara found your underpants.
That's right.
Come by and claim.
God.
And then the other piece of good news, this is called Mile High Wine and Vine. With more visitors than ever before, there's a new airport terminal in Florence that has a green roof and now sports a vineyard on top. The Italians are passionate, of course, about greening their buildings, with the famous Bosco Verticale in Milan being the flagship example. To celebrate its heritage as one of the wine capitals of the world, the Amerigo Vespucci International Airport in Florence features an 8-hectare or 9-acre vineyard on top of its long sloping roof. A local prestigious wine company will harvest the grapes and manage the vineyard roof, and the venting will also be done on site in a cellar on the airport grounds. The creative minds behind the project are Raphael Vignoli Architects, an American firm that was tasked with redesigning the international terminal as part of renovations to reorient the existing airport runway, which is inadequately short and adversely affected by nearby hills. Linear structures of precast concrete contain the soil and irrigation to sustain the vineyard and are held aloft by a network of branching columns inspired by the vines they hold up. The columns shade most of the terminal areas, which will help, of course, reduce energy from heating, and skylights will flood these areas with natural light, which I'm sure is absolutely gorgeous. Mm-hmm. There is a quote stating, "This enormous surface, which hides the airport terminal when viewed from..." Oh goodness, I'm gonna butcher this. Brunelleschi's Duomo and other prominent vantage points in the city will not only serve as a landmark for the city's sustainable future, but also as a symbol of traditions, history, and an innovative spirit that continues to drive the Italian economy into the 21st century. Long story long, go get your wine in Italy.
Literally.
Literally. And that's the good news.
Yay, good news.
I really need to bring Kirsten's science corner back at some point. Haven't had a lot of science.
We'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there. I'm proud of you for branching out.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so today we're going to talk about the history of cinema.
Woo.
Or the motion pictures. Brief overview, but like I tried to hit the high points.
Mm-hmm.
We start as early as 1830, which was honestly a shock for me.
Jeez.
Because, like,
yeah,
girl.
girl. That's very impressive.
But it starts mostly with photography, because if you've ever done one of those little flip book things, mm-hmm. that's like basically what they started with.
Ah, so not what I expected.
Right. In the mid 19th century, photography became like a mainstream thing, and like nobody smiled in pictures. We talked about that, I think, in one podcast or another. Mm-hmm. Especially during the Civil War, because it was used to like document American battlefields and mm-hmm. all that stuff. So ways to exhibit the photographs, because like this was cutting edge technology. So it was mm-hmm. like Instagram before Instagram. Several inventors came up with a simple toy that made it possible for a series of pictures to be viewed in rapid succession, creating the illusion of motion. And it was called a zoetrope. So very much similar to the flip book, or mm-hmm. I honestly, even one of those little like viewfinder things yeah. that were very popular in the 90s. I had one of those. It was cool.
I did too.
I had like a little Cinderella disc to go Aww. In, and it showed me like pictures of the Cinderella story. Anyway. The illusion of films is based on the optical phenomena known as the persistence of vision and the phi phenomenon. The first of these causes the brain to retain images cast upon the retina of the eye for a fraction of a second beyond their disappearance from the field of sight, while the latter creates an apparent movement between the images when they succeed one another rapidly. Together, these phenomena permit the succession of still frames on a film strip to represent continuous movement when projected at the proper speed, traditionally 16 frames per second for silent films and 24 frames per second for sound films.
Hmm.
Before the invention of photography, a variety of optical toys exploited this effect by mounting successive phase drawings of things in motion on the face of a twirling disc. So the phenakistoscope sure. In 1832, or the inside a rotating drum, the zoetrope.
I wonder why it mattered how many frames per second you needed silent versus sound.
It's probably some physics related answer mm-hmm. where like sound and light travel mm-hmm. differently, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're probably right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I can't bring that knowledge to the forefront of my brain.
Come
today.
On, Blair.
I know. But I feel like that's.
Yeah, that makes
I'm
sense.
In the right vein somewhere. So in 1939, Louis Jacques Mandé Dengarry.
Oh, 1839. Girl, you ain't even 18. Left the 1800s.
Sorry. 1839. You're right. I've had too much coffee this morning already. Mm. You know. This is what I get for drinking Chris's coffee.
I was going to say, what you get for drinking non-decaf coffee.
Literally, no, but like we have two extremes in this household. I'm decaf and Chris is two times caffeine. There is no in between. My poor parents came to visit and they were like, do you have regular coffee? We're like, no.
No, you have to feel like your heart's about to burst out of your face.
Or be tired. Take your pick.
Yeah. The second one is so real. I love having my coffee with Tyler in the morning. He's like, all right, let's go. And I'm like, can I have just a few more minutes?
I'm trying to trick my brain into believing there's caffeine in this. Anyway, 1839, French painter perfected the positive photographic process known as daguerreotype. I feel like there's a French way to say it. I'm just not that eloquent. I'm sorry. And that same year, an English scientist, William Henry Fox Talbot, successfully demonstrated a negative photographic process that theoretically allowed unlimited positive prints to be produced from each negative. Hmm. As photography was innovated and refined over the next few decades, it became possible to replace the phase drawings in the early optical toys and devices with individually posed phase photographs, a practice that was widely and popularly carried out. There would be no true motion pictures, however, until live action could be photographed spontaneously and simultaneously. So then we have many inventions. Basically, this required a reduction in exposure time from the hour or so necessary for the pioneer photographic process to the 100th of a second achieved in 1870. It also required the development of technology of a series of photography by the British-American photographer Edward Muybridge.
I think you have, Muybridge.
Between 1872 and 1877. During that time, Muybridge was employed by Leland Stanford of California, who was the governor. And he, so this is like the lore. Sure. So he was a zealous racehorse breeder. And he wanted to prove at some point in its gallop, a horse lifts up all four hooves. Okay. Off the ground at once.
Of all things that could spark.
This is what they did for fun.
Right. Right.
So conventions of a 19th century illustration suggested otherwise. And the moment, because like the human eye can't see it. The movement itself occurred too rapidly for perception by the naked eye. So they experimented with multiple cameras to take successive photographs. And finally, in 1877, he set up a battery of 12 cameras along the Sacramento racecourse with wires stretched across the track to operate their shutters. As the horse strode down the track, its hooves tripped each shutter individually to expose a successive photograph of the gallop, confirming Stanford's belief.
That's like very clever.
They were very clever, and they proved that the horse does lift up all four at some point during the gallop. Okay. And
then Walt Disney made Cinderella 2. No, just kidding.
We're getting there.
It's just crazy the things that like spark invention. Like it's usually the weirdest, most off-kilter thing. They're like, yeah, we just kind of wanted to see if all the horses' feet were in the air.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Literally. So the findings fascinated many. With Stanford's support, he created a sequential photo projector called a zoogyroscope. Honestly, would you guys just name them normal things, please?
Different times.
In 1879. So the zoogyroscope was in 1879. So we're getting to the 19th century or the 20th century, I guess, technically. I'm not going to think about it too much. With this device, Muybridge projected his photos to an enthralled San Francisco audience the following year. All right. So 12 pictures per second. We are moving up in the world. The French physiologist, whose name I cannot pronounce, took the first series photographs with a single instrument in 1882. Once again, the impetus was an analysis of motion too rapid for the perception of human eye. His last name is Mari, I guess. Invented the chronophotographic gun, a camera shaped like a rifle that recorded 12 successive photographs per second in order to study the movement of birds in flight. These images were imprinted on a rotating glass plate. Later would develop into the paper roll film. And for Gen Z, they used to be sold in canisters and you keep them in the freezer.
And then you shake it. I'm just kidding.
And then you shake it. And Mari sequentially attempted to project them. Like Muybridge, however, Mari was interested in deconstructing movement rather than synthesizing it. He did not carry his experiments much beyond the realm of high speed or instantaneous photography. In 1887, in Newark, New Jersey, an Episcopalian minister named Hannibal Goodwin developed the idea of using a celluloid as a base for photographic emulsions. The inventor and industrialist began manufacturing celluloid roll film in 1889 at his plant in Rochester, New York. This event was crucial to the development of cinematography. Series photography, such as Murray's chronophotography, could employ glass plates or paper strip film because it was recorded events of short duration in a relatively small number of images.
But in this run-on sentence,
cinematography would inevitably find its subjects in longer, more complicated events requiring thousands of images and therefore just the kind of flexible but durable recording medium represented by celluloid. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we're moving towards we're getting to the recording film on what your parents used to use.
Like a recorder.
Like a recorder. Yeah.
That's correct. Not the musical instrument.
The video recorder.
The video recorder. I can play one heck of a recorder. We have a lot.
No shade to my mom, but we have a lot of good footage of the inside of a lens cap. That's all I'm saying.
Good job, mom.
So let's see. Such a device was created by a French-born inventor, Louis de Prince, in the late 1800s. He shot several short films in Leeds, England, using the celluloid technology. In 1888, the following year, so in 1889, sorry, he began using the newly invented celluloid film, and he was scheduled to show his work in New York City in 1890, but he disappeared while traveling in France. Sus.
So sus, what?
The exhibition never occurred, and Le Prince's contribution to cinema remained little known for decades. Instead, it was William Kennedy Laurie Dickinson.
Oh, Dickinson.
Working for... in the West Orange,
oh,
Jersey,
man.
Laboratories of the Edison Company, who created what was widely regarded as the first motion picture camera. So Thomas Edison actually, as we'll find out in the next paragraph, had something to do with not only the light bulb, as everyone knows and loves him for, but also movies.
And then taking out Dixon.
Right. So
inside
yeah,
job.
That, I mean, in 1889, I feel like that's, that would take a lot of effort because, you know, they didn't have planes.
Sure.
But you're not wrong. I don't know.
He's like, oh, look at this. He's like, I'll be taking that.
So the kinetograph is what, Thomas Edison and his British assistant, William Dickinson, invented. And they were worried that others were gaining ground in the camera development.
That's all I'm saying.
That's why they invented it in 1890. A primitive motion picture camera. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
That's cool, though.
In 1892, he announced the invention of the kinetoscope, a machine that could project the moving images onto a screen. So we're getting close. We're almost there.
Very close.
Movies, almost. We're getting there. These were a device adapted from the escapement mechanism of a clock.
Oh.
To ensure the intermittent but regular motion of the film strip through the camera, a regularly perforated celluloid film strip, which is basically like what you imagine film to look like in like the old movies with the big rotating film disc thing.
Yep.
To ensure precise synchronization between the film strip and the shutter. Dickinson's camera, the strip kinetograph, initially imprinted up to 50 feet of celluloid film at a rate of 40 frames per second. And we said 24 frames per second was the minimum for sound
films. Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
In 1894, Edison initiated public film screenings in recently opened kinetograph parlors. Because Edison had originally conceived of motion pictures as an adjunct to his phonograph, he did not commission the invention of a projector to accompany the kinetograph. Rather, he had Dickinson design a type of peep show viewing device called kinetoscope, in which a continuous 47-foot film loop ran on spools between an incandescent lamp that shuttered for individual viewing. Starting so like you know how the
so you just look like, in
right
by yourself
right
wow what a beautiful group outing this has been
well yeah
right
in 1894 kinetoscopes were marketed commercially through the firm of Raff and Gammon for $250 to $300 a piece, which was a lot of money back then. The Edison company established its own kinetograph studio, a single room building called the Black Maria, that rotated on tracks to follow the sun in West Orange, New Jersey. So
that's where it's got its light source from.
Yes.
Interesting.
To supply. Okay. So basically they started putting kinetoscopes in penny arcades and hotel lobbies, amusement parks, etc., and other like semi-public places. So it was kind of like an attraction.
Sure.
Yeah, like the movies, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. In April of that year, so what year is this? We're in 1894. So in April of that year, the first kinetoscope parlor was opened in a converted storefront in New York City. The parlor charged 25 cents for admission to a bank of five machines.
Wow.
Okay. So, the syndicate of McGuire and Baucus, acquired the foreign rights to the kinetoscope in 1894 and began to market the machines. Edison opted not to file for international patents on either his camera or the viewing device, and as a result, the machines were widely and legally copied throughout Europe, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were modified and improved far beyond the American originals. Europe. in fact, it was the kinetoscope exhibition in Paris that inspired the Lumiere brothers, Augusta and Louis, to invent the first commercially viable projector. Their cinematography, which functioned as a camera and printer, as well as a projector, ran at the economical speed of 16 frames per second.
Only good for silent films.
I know. It was given its first commercial demonstration in December 28th of 1895.
Cute.
Unlike the kinetograph, which was battery driven and weighed more than 1,000 pounds.
Good grief. Wait, you just gonna slide by that?
Yeah.
Good they're big machines.
They're like, you know, yeah, they're
cheese
they're
and crackers.
Large, very large. The cinematography was hand cranked, lightweight, so it weighed less than 20 pounds. And was relatively portable. And this naturally affected the kinds of films that were made with each machine, right? So Edison's films initially featured material such as a circus or a vaudeville acts that could be taken into a small studio to perform. But like early Lumiere films were made like documentaries, basically, mm-hmm. where they were able to film like real life.
Imagine somebody's arm muscles who's just cranking that thing every single show.
Yeah. Crazy. Wow.
Biceps for days.
Biceps for days. So after a few years, the design changed in the machines and made it possible for Edison and the Lumieres to shoot the same kinds of subjects. But in general, Lumiere technology became the European standard during the early era. And because Lumieres sent their cameramen all over the world in search of exotic subjects, the cinematography... there's like an accent somewhere in there.
Sure.
Became the founding instrument of distant cinemas in Russia, Australia, and Japan.
Hmm.
All right. So I put a little note in here because I was like, basically this was a big deal. And to summarize a very long section of the article, the movie business at the time was one company that had a projector and the equipment and the movies all in one package.
Nice.
Yeah. So it was kind of like one big thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But now in 1897, so we're still in the 1800s,
mm-hmm.
they started traveling around circuses to be able to show these mm-hmm. moving pictures, right?
Mm-hmm.
This created a separation like from the production company to the actual like people showing the movies, right? And they had a lot of control. So the separation, the people showing the movies had a lot of control over what was shown and how they were cut together, which basically mm-hmm. invented the first style of editing.
Sure.
Because the sure. people who had, because you had these big like film strips
right.
that people were in charge of, and they were in charge of showing like the order in which all of these things went.
Right.
So, yeah,
I can imagine that got a little dicey at times.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
how they did it,
that's which showbiz, is
exciting
baby.
For them. Yeah, no, exactly. So we're going to skip a little bit ahead. Let's see. There was a few more inventors that like contributed to the different like styles of film. And you guys can go crazy with that
Yeah.
later on.
It seems very in depth.
It is very in depth. I would like to share this one fun fact though. In the early days of film, so in the early 1900s, like 1903-ish, film's popularity encouraged investors and led to the establishment of the first permanent film theaters, which are called Nickelodeons.
Oh my gosh.
So, and the definition of a Nickelodeon is basically a movie theater. Nickelodeon was the first type of indoor exhibition space dedicated to showing projected motion pictures in the United States and Canada. Running about 12 minutes, it also helped boost standard film length toward one reel or 1,000 feet.
If you
So,
guys don't know, Nickelodeon was a very popular TV
and
station
continues to be.
and continues to be today. It's like the station that if you were a kid in the 90s, you probably knew a lot about because that's where SpongeBob was a big player. Even outside of like the older kids' shows, that's Dora the Explorer. I mean, we're talking a huge conglomerate, and it's so interesting that they use Nickelodeon as their name for that. It's so weird.
It's so interesting. I think there's probably some thought there.
Oh,
I don't know
sure.
what it was, but anyway, I'm gonna give you guys a break, and then we're gonna finally enter the pre-World War I era by
Woo!
the time we get back. All right.
Hi, Kirsten.
Hi, Blair.
Do you have cats?
Why, yes, I do.
Then you should play mediocre content for your cats.
And why is that?
Because it has been shown to soothe cats and reduce hairballs.
Really?
Yes, in fact, I play mediocre content for my cats too. Mediocre content is for all pets.
That's so great to know. I will play mediocre content for my cats right now.
You should. Everyone should listen to mediocre content with their pets today.
Mediocre content has not been shown to reduce hairballs or soothe any animals of any species. In fact, it's very probable to create the exact opposite effect. Please use caution while exposing your furry friends to mediocre content. It's also pretty dodgy for humans, so listen at your own risk. Mediocre content is not responsible for any negative effects of podcast listening.
Welcome back.
Woo.
We are entering into the 1900s, where, so right now we've just been operating with one reel of film at a time, right? And now we're getting to the multiple reel films.
Fun.
Similarly to when we were kids, movies were typically about an hour and a half. And now all movies, for some reason, are 3 hours long.
Oh my gosh, when do we get me started?
That's a whole other debate for a whole other podcast because it's insane. Anyway.
Anyway.
Anyway. All right. So, multiple reel films appeared in the United States as early as 1907. So Adolph Zukor distributed Pathé's three-reel Passion Play. But when the Vitagraph produced the five-reel The Life of Moses in 1909, the MPPC forced it to be released in serial fashion at the rate of one reel a week.
It's like waiting for episodes to come out.
Correct. The
Gross.
multiple reel film, which came to be called a feature in the vaudevillian sense of the headline attraction, achieved general acceptance with the smashing success of the 3 1/2 reel Les Amours de la Reine Elizabeth, Queen Elizabeth, in 1912.
Very cute.
Which starred Sarah Bernhardt, which was imported by Zukor, who founded the independent famous Players production company with its profits. And this is also the time where they're doing like the world's fairs. So
Right.
people are coming from all over to these big cities in the United States to see these like feature films that nobody's ever seen before. And it's all very like new and exciting.
Fancy.
Yes. So at first there were difficulties distributing the features because the exchanges associated with both the MPPC, which let me look that up really quick because I forgot what that abbreviation means and I feel like you guys need to know. Kirsten,
Yes.
say something, do something while I'm doing this.
Something. Oh, I could have looked it up for you too.
Okay, so it's the Motion Picture Patents Company. Just
Oh, so they just provide patents.
yes, for all of these motion pictures. And this was how they did it in the early days. So difficulty distributing features, the MPPC and their independents were geared towards cheaply made one reel shorts, because obviously that's easier, because of their more elaborate production values. Features had relatively higher negative costs. This was a disadvantage to both distributors who charged a uniform price per foot. By the 1914, however, several national feature distribution alliances that correlated pricing with the film's negative cost and box office receipts were organized. These new exchanges demonstrated the economic advantage of multiple reel films over shorts. Exhibitors quickly learned that features could command higher audience or higher admission prices and longer runs. Single title packages were also cheaper and easier to advise than programs of multiple titles. As for manufacturing, producers found that higher expenditure for features was readily amortized by high volume sales to distributors, who in turn were eager to share the higher admission returns from the theaters. The whole industry soon reorganized itself around the economics of the multiple reel film, and effects of it. This restructuring did much to give movies their characteristic modern form. So basically, it used to be that there was like one reel, and you get a bunch of one reels, and they show you all of them. And now you get a multiple reel film. And people are coming, they're loving it. More people are seeing it because there's a fuller story. Like you get attached to the characters, it's a whole thing. And that's how the modern day movie format was born. And as we're seeing now, it's also kind of declining in a way, like in a weird form, because we have streaming, which is a whole other thing. I did not talk about that in this particular podcast, but that could be like a whole nother thing. But we are seeing a regression of like people going out and actively going to go see movies because they'll just come out on streaming and you can watch them from your couch and it's way more comfortable. I will say Chris and I do go to the movies. We try to go to the movies at least once a week. So,
Well, I mean,
which
it could be
honestly is
expensive
expensive.
too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's expensive to go to the movies, I will say. A lot of movie theaters, though, do have like a fun rewards program where you get like one or two free movies a month, which is pretty cool. And you get a discount on snacks.
I do love snacks.
I love snacks. But Chris loves the movies. So we try to go once a week, and it's fun because you get to see movies, you know, in the big screen and comfy chairs and all that stuff. So
Exactly. Yeah. I think
it's a fun little time.
that's a thing. Yeah. You can pay for a stream, which, and honestly, we've talked about this before too, but I think overall people are subscriptioned out, which is
Literally.
funny because it's like we were transitioning away from going out to the movies, and then they had like Redbox where you could just rent it and take it home. And then they were like, well, just be at home and just turn on the TV. And now we're like, well, now I have 20 different subscriptions because I can only watch this movie from a certain subscription, as opposed to like, oh, it just came out, I'll just go see it. You know, it's just like this
No,
weird,
exactly.
just
Exactly.
transitions that happen.
It's crazy to me. I find myself like longing for the days where the TV just told me what I wanted to watch. You know,
You
like
tell me.
I have like four or five channels that I love, and it just says, this is what's on right now. So pick. And I'm like, great, this is wonderful. Because now, and I think this is part of the reason, like people have comfort shows because for people like me who are chronically anxious, we have a hard time, like, you know, trying new things. And we just want something that we know is going to be good. And there's like a million different choices. And I don't want to spend my time
On a
like
bad
scrolling
choice.
through. like figuring out what to watch, and I don't want to spend time on a bad choice. Exactly.
Yeah. No, like, I agree. It's like choice overload.
Yeah. Like, just tell me what I want to watch. Like, I know that they have the algorithm and they like, you know, whatever, but it just bothers me that like sometimes there's just too many choices. And like, I don't know.
We could go down the rabbit hole too. That's also why sometimes I listen to the radio so that I have the commercials in between, because Spotify is so much constant all the time. Yeah. And I think that's just our attention span problem now, is because we're constantly fed content without a break, that now when there is a break, we're like, well, that's weird. Let me fill that. Oh, it's on a commercial break. Let me pick up my phone, you know,
It's crazy. And I like listening to the radio as well. I haven't in a long time, but like radio is a vibe. And I find, since we move so much, I like listening to the radio, because the radio, even the stations that are like just pop music or whatever, they still provide insight into what's happening in the community.
That too.
So it's kind of cool to like be like, oh, well, this is what people are going to go do this weekend, or like, this is a festival that's coming to my area, or like whatever it is, you know, or like concerts, you know. Whereas like on Spotify, you don't get any of that.
I mean, unless you don't pay for Spotify, in which case, enjoy your commercials.
Right. But like, to not pay for Spotify is insane. That Speaking is insane of subscriptions. Behavior. I will say I was probably one of the last holdouts, I feel, because I had free Spotify like all the way up until Chris and I started living together.
Yeah.
He was like, how do you not have paid for Spotify yet? I was like, I don't
honestly
know.
I got really annoyed in college when, and I couldn't really afford it in college because I didn't have a job in college really, but I got really annoyed in college when it only had you gave you a certain number of skips. Like, if you give me a crap song and five times in a row, I get a crap song on the playlist I made.
Right. No, exactly.
So mad.
Oh my God. Also, I don't know if this happens to you, but like when I push shuffle on Spotify, it like, sometimes it plays the same song.
Yeah.
Like on shuffle. And so I learned on TikTok that if you clear out your Spotify cache,
cache.
Then it'll like reshuffle everything, and I'm like, that's amazing, and that makes so much sense. But it is dumb. You're right.
Been listening to the same song since 2018.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. But yeah. So anyway, hot tip for those who are elder millennials.
You get a tip on that tangent.
Yeah, literally. All right, let's see if we can bring this back over to movies now. So movies, the feature was born. We have people sitting for longer periods of time, developing character relationships in the screen. We got it. Okay. Feature films made motion pictures respectable for the middle class by providing a format that was analogous to that of a legitimate theater and was suitable for the adaptation of the middle class novels and plays. So these films were not made for the upper elite. They were still seeing theater. They were still doing these very elite activities. But films were made for people who couldn't necessarily pay for / travel to these elite theaters. Okay. This new audience had more demanding standards than the older working class one, and producers readily increased their budget to provide high technical quality and elaborate productions. The new viewers also had more refined sense of comfort, which exhibitors quickly accommodated by replacing their storefronts with large, elegantly appointed new theaters in the major urban centers. So the first one was a 3,300 seat theater in the Broadway district of Manhattan. So
fancy.
Fancy.
Not surprising,
indeed,
though.
Yeah. And that was in 1914. So known as dream palaces because of the fantastic luxuriance of their interiors, these houses had had to show features rather than a program of shorts to attract large audiences at a premium prices. By 1916, there were more than 21,000 movie theaters across the United States. Jeez. Their advent marked the end of the Nickelodeon era. Sad.
Sag.
Not until network TV came into play. Sure. And foretold the rise of the Hollywood studio system, which dominated urban exhibition from the 1920s to the 50s, which we would refer to as, Kirsten, the golden age of Hollywood.
I was going to say, I don't freaking know.
The golden age of Hollywood. Yes.
Sure.
Okay. So now we're going to travel from New York to the southern region of California.
Woo.
Where LA is. As a result of the Nickelodeon boom, some exhibitors who showed three separate programs over a seven-day period had begun to require as many as 20 films per week, and it became necessary to put the production on a systematic year-round schedule.
Okay.
So we're kind of flashbacking a little bit.
Sure.
But this is the origin of Hollywood as we know it. So they needed a place where the weather was good.
Mm-hmm.
So they could film and film mm-hmm. and film, similar to how YouTubers also need mm-hmm. the weather to be good so they can film and film and film.
Mm-hmm.
Because most films were still shot outdoors in the available light in this time period. Such schedules could not be maintained in the vicinity of New York or Chicago, where the industry had originally located itself, because
it's cold.
Right. No, exactly. And so as early as 1907, production companies such as Selig Polyscope began to dispatch production units to warmer climates during the wintertime. It was soon clear that what producers required was a new industrial center, one with warm weather, a temperate climate, and a variety of scenery. California, you can literally get to the mm-hmm. mountains, the desert, or the ocean within an hour of each other.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy pants. So various companies experimented with the location shooting in Jacksonville, Florida, San Antonio, Texas,
ooh, shout out
Santa Fe, New Mexico, and even Cuba, because that was open at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But the ultimate site of the American film industry was Los Angeles, obviously.
Obviously.
It was generally thought that Hollywood's distance from the MPPC, which we talked about, lives in New York, made it attractive to the independent film industry because there was less regulation across the country. So some major film companies established facilities in Los Angeles in response to a number of the region's attractions. And these included the temperate climate. We talked about this. So basically all of the New York companies ended up moving to Los Angeles as well, or opening a branch in mm-hmm. Los Angeles. And there was also low taxes at the time, cheap and plentiful labor, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of pros, right? Mm-hmm. So in 1915, approximately 15,000 workers were employed by the motion picture industry in Hollywood.
Crazy.
And more than 60% of American production was centered there. So in the same year, the trade journal Variety reported that capital investment in American motion pictures, the business of artisanal craftsmen and fairground operators only a decade before had exceeded $500 million.
Jeez.
Yep.
That is quite a jump, in fairness.
Yep.
From vaudeville to California.
Right. And so all of these companies, so the companies that moved out there, so the most powerful companies in the new film capital were independents who were flush with cash from their conversion to feature production. So these companies included Famous Players, Alasky Corporation, which was later became Paramount Pictures. And there was that one. There was Universal Pictures, also was out there at the beginning. Goldwyn Picture Corporation. Also, now Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, something like that, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's the Lion one.
Yeah.
And then, is there one more? And then Fox Film Corporation, which is mm-hmm. now 20th Century Fox. So, yeah.
Yeah.
There are, that's, yeah. That's the origins of Hollywood, if you will. Let's see. So, they established their production facilities in Burbank, California in 1922. Warner Brothers Pictures also went out there, and Columbia Pictures was also out there. Okay. And then we usher in Marilyn Monroe and all of the mm-hmm. lovely other mm-hmm. people of that time. And they're making beautiful, wonderful golden age of Hollywood in the 50s and 60s after World War II. Mm-hmm. And people are making lots of money. And now it's just the Marvel Cinematic Universe, basically.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, that's basically it. After we all kind of know what happens after the golden era of Hollywood. You know,
everybody jumped on that train.
Right. We moved into the 70s and 80s mm-hmm. and to what we, and 90s, and now we're here.
And this is important yeah. too, because I think we did an episode on animation as well, and mm-hmm. the rise of animated films and animated movies, and mm-hmm. It all started here physically with mm-hmm. just trying to get moving pictures of people.
Yeah.
Well, I say people, horses specifically.
Yeah. We actually, speaking of animation really quick, we went to the Aviation Museum at Pearl Harbor.
Oh, I bet that was so cool.
It was really cool. And they also had an exhibition, temporary exhibition. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's still there, about Walt Disney in World War II. And like he made cartoons and different like mascots for different different groups of people, like different
characters,
no,
like propaganda.
No, well, yes. But like yes, but so he made different like mascots for the different branches of the military, but also each different squadron. That's what I was looking for different squadrons. And so you could write to Walt Disney and be like, hey, our squadron like wants you to design us something. Can you do that? And the animators like didn't mm-hmm. have a lot of work during World War II because mm-hmm. they had paused film production because everything was going towards the war. Right. They like designed like different things, and you can see them on the planes, and it's pretty mm-hmm. cool. It's neat.
Pretty cool.
Yeah. So anyway, do you have a favorite movie, Kirsten?
I do, actually, but you first. What's your favorite? sorry.
I will. That was not what I anticipated.
I'm
asking.
No.
I definitely. So my first instinct is to say A Cinderella Story with Hilary Duff and Chad Michael Murray, because is my favorite like girl sleepover movie. Like mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. it was always on. Mm-hmm. It's the best. It's like such a good movie. I will say that I have other favorite movies, but like that's the one that like comes to mind first because it just like gives me childhood nostalgia. Mm-hmm. I will also say, like, from in a dramatic category, I think The Dark Knight is a really good movie.
I still think it's a good movie.
Mm-hmm. But then I will say some of the Marvel movies are pretty good. And I like Chris is huge into that. So like I mm-hmm. have gone and seen like most of them, and I like a lot of them.
Yeah. I agree. I think
also a lot of my favorite things to watch now are TV shows. Like,
okay.
Not like The Office. I'm talking, but like more of like limited series kind of mm-hmm. TV shows. Like Scarlet Witch, WandaVision is what it's called on Disney Plus. Highly recommend that. And we're watching, because it's Halloween, we're watching Agatha All Along, which is another Marvel thing on Disney Plus, but it's really good, and you wouldn't know it was Marvel if you didn't like see it.
Yeah that's cool.
So that's what I'm into right now. I don't know, I probably should have thought about this more before I asked you, but
says
anyway.
The person that asked the question.
I know.
Okay, well, it is interesting to me that we both have comfort movies that are related to the Cinderella storyline, because genuinely my comfort movie that will forever be top is Ever After with Drew Barrymore and Doug Ray Scott. And
that's such
and
a good one.
Houston.
Oh, it's so good.
To this day, when I need a pick me up, that movie is playing genuinely. Yeah. But I did also like the remake, the recent Cinderella one that they did. And she was absolutely lovely with, gosh, I forget her name over the time. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It was one of the recent ones that they did. But I will say some of the other movies I do go back to is Memoirs of a Geisha. Sad, but it's a good, good movie. And then my recent favorite, which I did not expect, is the new Cruella remake that they did. That one.
Oh, yeah. With Emma Stone.
So freaking good.
It's so good. Oh, my gosh.
So yeah, those are my movies. I don't mind the Marvel movies. Tyler likes them. They're just not my vibe.
Yeah. It's a lot. Like, yeah. A lot of, like, I like some of them more than others because like the most recent Captain Marvel movie with all three women as like the main character. I liked that one more than I liked some of the other ones just because I like related to it more, I think.
Yeah.
And I like the Spider-Man ones because they're just funny. I get that. Yeah. Like sometimes it's a lot.
Yeah.
Like a lot of shooting, a lot of action. And sometimes it seems like they're just like putting action together for the sake of it. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't seem very well.
No,
like,
I know exactly what that is. I watched Dragon Ball Z.
Right.
No, it's just action for the sake of action. I think that's my problem though, is I'm also not like a live action kind of person. I'm very much an animated movie, TV series kind of person. Totally. So if I do find a non-animated thing that I do watch regularly, it's really good. It's really good. So.
Can I also say my fall comfort movies? Like,
yes,
I have fall comfort movies. Okay.
Okay.
So first of all, You've Got Mail.
Okay.
With Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. I know it's old. Okay. Don't come for me.
It's fine.
It's literally so good. And it's like the Nora Ephron-esque, like cozy with like the fall leaves. And it's just it's like New York and like, before it became like too expensive, and it was just like, it's so good. It's everything.
the crab hands. I know you guys can't see her crab hands, but she's doing crab hands.
Like, it's so good. So there's that one, and then Practical Magic.
Okay.
Nicole Kidman and Sandra Bullock. So good. Mm. So spooky. We love a good witch movie. Hocus Pocus again. Mm. Very good. The original, not the new ones.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are like,
those are good.
Those are so good. And then of course Gilmore Girls, because like, why not?
You know, I recently rewatched Legally Blonde, and then I finally watched Legally Blonde 2 for the very first time. Like,
oh nice, this past the red, month. White, and blue one.
Yes, yeah, it was very interesting.
It's so good. The first one is the best.
The first one is the
best. The second one is not bad.
It could be worse for sure.
Yeah.
But I feel the one of the protagonists, or maybe it's antagonist, I don't know which one, but she plays in a lot of crime movies. It's the girl that like, she walks in and she's like, not my place. But I feel like she plays in a lot of like CSI related or NCIS related shows, and I just cannot place her. I've been meaning to look it up. But anyway, as soon as I saw her, I was like, it's going to be good.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you're in a lot of stuff like this when it comes to like Washington and government and
yeah
stuff like that. Yeah. Gosh, what is her freaking name? I'm gonna have to look it up after.
Is it the older lady that was like her boss in the second one?
No, it was like one of her coworkers on the team that she's there with.
That I can't place. I haven't seen that, the second one, in a long time. Side note, Princess Diaries 3 is getting greenlit.
But Julie Andrews said no.
Well, yeah, but she's old. Like, okay, not in like a disrespectful way, but like in a I don't blame her, because she's like 80
she's
years
old. She is. It's Regina King.
Oh yes,
she is fabulous.
She's also in A Cinderella Story.
Just right, exactly.
She does the diner,
but she also does like a lot of like related. I feel like she's in a lot of like movies that relate to like justice or government, but maybe I'm thinking of someone else.
You might be thinking of Kerry Washington, maybe, because she plays Olivia Pope and she likes a lawyer as
maybe
well.
Maybe that is what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. She's really great. And I love seeing her.
She is really
face.
Great. No, she's really great. Yeah. I agree.
They panned to her and I was like, oh my gosh, girl,
it's
you're
gonna
here.
Be a good movie. Yeah.
Yes.
Love that.
Well, you do you have a favorite genre then? You have that question here too. Should I throw that at you?
Yeah. So I would say I gravitate more towards, I can't watch like the apocalyptic movies like Interstellar, which we've established, and also Day After Tomorrow. Like those movies freak me out. So that's a no.
Fair enough.
So like suspense movies, can't do it. Fair. But like if it's cheesy, like Mission Impossible kind of, then like, yeah, I can do it. That's fine. But like the like natural disaster, like I can't do it. I convince myself that it's going to happen and it's real, and it's like not.
Yeah, when I saw Sharknado for the first time.
Oh my god!
So just kidding.
That's not what I mean. And
I know. Tyler loves those. That's so stupid.
I can't. That's a guilty pleasure for sure.
For sure.
Okay, so I gravitate more towards like romantic comedies / romance movies because like. Obviously. Mm-hmm. Like we grew up on Confessions of a Teenage Drama Queen and the Cinderella Story and Princess Diaries. Like, how could I not? You know
it's
what
true.
I mean?
It's true. And Parent Trap.
And Parent Trap. No, exactly. So that's kind of what I gravitate toward. That would be my favorite. Mm-hmm. I'm not a scary movie girl.
Me neither.
I do like movies that tell stories as well, but those just don't come out very often and they're not in theaters for very long. So it gets a little sad because like, I like movies that have other points other than just like fight the bad guys. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
But,
no,
like,
I agree.
It's few and far between nowadays.
I agree. I'm not a rom-com kind of person per se. I don't mind them. I'm not somebody that likes the Hallmark movies very much, but like my aunt does, you know, like that's
I like watching the Hallmark movies and making fun of them. Very funny.
She likes watching them.
Like legit.
Yeah. Which is fine. They're cute. They're predictable. They're fun.
Oh, totally.
They ring in the season. Yeah. You know,
you can turn your brain off and totally know what's going on. No. Yeah. Exactly. I get it. I just watched a series on Netflix, which is now off Netflix, called Good Witch. And it's like a Hallmark TV show. And there's like seven seasons and it's very like fall witchy vibes, but there's like no real plot.
Love.
It's like so funny.
And we've missed the plot.
The most ridiculous part of this show, in my opinion, not to interrupt your answer because so the town that they live in is like very special and like magical and like lovely, and I can't even remember the name. That's how little of a plot there is.
What a great series.
But their rival town is called Blairsville. So like,
so but you took that real personally.
So like the first 5 episodes, they're like, Blairsville is so stupid. We hate Blairsville. I'm like, this is slander.
Personal attack.
This is literally the worst show ever. And like Chris and I were like, well, maybe we should make a drinking game every time they say Blairsville. We'll like
drunk forever.
Shot. Oh my God.
That's great.
But yeah.
I'm sorry you felt personally offended by the show.
I did. But I continued to watch all 7 seasons. So
well, that's fair. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I have a genre. That's a tougher question.
Genre.
I like things with history in them. Like a little bit of history. Like it doesn't have to be full historical. I do enjoy documentaries.
I do too.
You know, like too. Not unironic. I genuinely do enjoy a good documentary.
No, I do too. But like, let me guess. Are they all nature documentaries?
No.
Oh, good. Okay.
I can't watch the nature documentaries because nature's horrifying. And I do get sad because I just like the sad eagle that came down and took that duck. Oh my gosh. I had a traumatizing weekend with animals, but I'm not going to tell anybody about that. We already hashed it out, but
good.
No, I can't do nature documentaries. It does make me sad. I do enjoy historical or historically related So like Memoirs of a Geisha isn't exactly historical, but it is a memoir of someone's life. And it does have actually real things that happened during that time frame.
Correct.
That draw you in. And it's got a decent story. So it's like stuff like that, I guess. I don't know what you would call that.
It's like historical fiction. Sure. Maybe, like period pieces. Kind of.
Yeah. Because that's kind of why I like Ever After too. Like it's obviously not a documentary of like early century France, but I mean, it's
Do you like Bridgerton? Are you a Bridgerton girly?
Really. We watched the first couple of episodes and we thought we were really into it, but we have yet to go back to it. So we must not have been that into it.
Okay. All right.
It was fine.
I would try it again because it is that like period piece, like drama kind of thing.
I think the reason I fell away, sorry, not to interrupt you. The reason I fell away from it is because it felt too much like a Hallmark movie. Like it was too predictable. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, duh, of course. Yeah.
Well, and a lot of people have problems with its like inaccuracy to the period. Because like,
Fair enough.
It is like a period piece, but it's not
very loose.
It's very loose. It's very loose. And there's like a lot of colors and like a lot of, you know, fashion that like necessarily wouldn't match the time period, but it looks cute. Like, you know,
it does look cute. I do like the costumes that they had for that show. I can say 10 out of 10. They were beautiful with the episodes we watched.
No, I agree.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. That's hard. Hard questions are hard.
I know.
But that's okay. Anyway. Well,
I think that's it. I think we did it.
I think we did it, guys. We did it. We did a whole episode. What I'll say, okay, so before we do the whole okay bye situation, like Blair said at the beginning, some of the episodes are going to be mixed in. We will have Halloween related episodes coming up, obviously, for October. We'll rearrange some as well. You may have, you know, a happy Halloween in December, but that's okay. We're going to get through it. Keep your calendars open for January with one of our new segments that's coming at you real hard. Can't believe we are 3 months away from that. That makes me a little nauseous, but we'll think about that later. We spent the entire summer moving. So there's that.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know what year it is. Like, especially because of where I live now. I'm like, what season is it? What time period am I in? Like, what's going on?
Blair is talking to me in the future from the past.
It's true.
This is spooky. That's the real spook here. Really? But with all of that said, we appreciate you guys being patient with us. You can still send us questions, comments, concerns, or episode topics at our Gmail at mediocrecontentpodcast@gmail.com. You can still catch us on Instagram or TikTok if you'd like. Twitch is still not up and running for obvious reasons, so I'm not even going to give that a second thought for the moment. And then please don't forget to rate us 5 stars now that we're back. We genuinely appreciate it. And we will see you guys next week.
This has been Mediocre Content.
Thanks so much for listening. Cheers.
Cheers.